Good morning, and thank you for all coming to this meeting where we review the interim results for the 24 weeks ended the 33rd of March 2018. The financial highlights of the period are these: group revenues up 3% to 7.4 billion, adjusted operating profit up 1% to 648 million, adjusted profit before tax also up 1% to 628 million, adjusted earnings per share up 3% to 0.613. The dividend will be going up also by 3% to 0.117 per share. It's been another period of heavy gross investment, 672 million pounds, and we end the period with net cash of 123 million pounds. Profit growth very much in line with our expectations. Primark traded very strongly in the U.K. through the period, and the selling space expansion, which is such an important part of Primark's journey, is well on track. In AB Sugar, in our sugar businesses, further good progress to reduce costs, absolutely vital to our success in the future. Once again, we've taken tens of millions of pounds out of our cost base across all our sugar businesses. We produced more sugar both in Africa and also in Europe, and we've seen lower European prices. I'll come back to all three of those later on. I don't want to miss out the other parts of the businesses. Grocery profits are up 9%, ingredients up 11%, and agriculture also up 9%. A robust performance for the group and results we're pleased with. John.
Great. Thank you very much, George. So our group revenue of 7.4 billion pounds was an increase of 2% on last year, and adjusted operating profit at 648 million was 1% down. With well over half of the group's revenues and operating profit generated outside the U.K., last year's weakness of sterling had a very favorable effect on the translation of our overseas results. This half year, sterling has slightly strengthened against our major trading currencies other than the euro, and this led to a loss on translation in these results of some 11 million pounds. The contribution from acquisitions, and that's mainly Acetum this year and Specialty Blending last year, was 4 million pounds. Our adjusted profit measure reflects the underlying performance of the business. You'll notice an additional item this year, and that's 15 million pounds for acquired inventory fair value adjustments. IFRS 3 requires a step up in the valuation of inventories at the time of an acquisition from historical cost to fair value. The 15 million here relates to Acetum, where the number is particularly high given the process of aging the balsamic vinegar in barrels over a number of years. We'll see an adjustment in our income statement for probably the next two or so years, but that will be declining as the step up is amortized. This year's unadjusted or statutory profit was 618 million, 3% down on last year. Just a reminder for you, last year's profit on the sale of businesses of 255 million, that comprised the disposal of our U.S. herbs and spices business and also the sale of the South China sugarcane business. Net interest expense reduced from 25 million to 18 million pounds, and that primarily reflected a movement in interest rates, and that's particularly on the borrowings in currencies that we've expected to weaken significantly against sterling over time. So that's particularly currencies in Southern Africa, and they've gone for us. Profit before tax declined from 867 million to 603 million, but increased on an adjusted basis by 1% to 628 million. The tax line shows the makeup of the tax charge. The reported charge was much higher last year because of the tax on the gain on disposal of businesses. The underlying charge, or the effective tax rate, has fallen from 22.7% to 21.3%. The main driver of this is the benefit on the tax paid on our U.S. earnings following the reduction in the federal corporate tax rate from the beginning of this calendar year. I estimate the benefit of that to be about 100 basis points for the current financial year, and we're obviously reflecting that at the half year. The rate also benefited from a change in the mix of profits by tax jurisdiction. Adjusted earnings per share increased by 3% to 61.3 pence. On an unadjusted basis, they declined 24% to 60.9 pence, but of course that reflects again last year the profit on disposal of businesses. The board has declared an interim dividend of 11.7 pence per share, and that's an increase of 3% on last year. Turning to the balance sheet, if we look at the equity shareholders' funds line, that's increased significantly again this year. So this year, the increase is £1 billion to £8.8 billion. The main drivers of this are twofold. So it's profit from operations over the year, but it's also, you'll notice, and it's this line right at the bottom here, a £553 million improvement in the financial position of the group's defined benefit pension schemes from a net deficit this time last year to a net surplus of £350 million. So let me cover that net pension asset first. Much of this improvement was seen in the second half of last year. The U.K. defined benefit scheme accounts for some 90% of the group's pension liabilities. The latest triennial valuation was completed as of April 2017, and that showed higher investment returns than expected and also experience gains, not least more exits from the scheme than anticipated, and they were the main drivers. Not surprisingly, there was no requirement to agree a recovery plan with the trustees, which is obviously quite unusual for major schemes like ours. The further improvement this half year follows the decline in bond yields since the year end. Going on to intangibles, the increase of £160 million is primarily the result of the intangibles and goodwill arising on the Achatem acquisition in October, less the amortization in the period. The increase in our fixed assets reflect the continued investment by the group, over half of which was in Primark, and that runs ahead of depreciation. The growth in working capital is a result of the production of much more sugar this year, mainly in Europe, and George is going to make reference to this later on, but also higher Primark inventories with deliveries accelerated ahead of the Chinese New Year. And that's the timing of Chinese New Year. I know people say Chinese New Year comes here every year, but it's the timing of it that affected us this year. So the Primark inventory is expected to unwind in the second half, but I do expect higher sugar stocks at this year end than last year end, which will reflect some rebuilding following the virtual depletion of stocks in the EU last year. Net cash of £123 million is broadly in line with the cash that we had on the balance sheet last half year. But of course, it's down from the £673 million of cash that we had on the balance sheet at the year end. The half year cash flow, which I'll show in a moment, will explain the decline, but a reminder, half of it, of course, is the acquisition of Achatem. So let's come on to the cash flow. I think the thing to notice here is that in 2018, we've returned to our normal seasonal cash outflow that we normally see in the first half. And a reminder for you all, that's driven by the sugar campaign in the Northern Hemisphere. I emphasized last year that the cash inflow that we had was actually unusual in that year. I've explained the drivers of the working capital outflow already. Capital expenditure, you'll notice, was marginally down for Primark. So just to anticipate any questions, it merely reflects the phasing of spend, and it does not reflect any slowdown in our capital commitment for that business. The 195 million outflow on the acquisition line is virtually all at Chatham. So including the debt assumed, the total consideration for that business was 282 million, and there's another 2 million which is deferred. So now coming on to the segmental analysis. So revenue is ahead in grocery, agriculture and Primark, and the decline in ingredients is driven by translation. So ingredient sales, because actually virtually all of our ingredient sales are outside of the UK, they were actually 5% ahead at constant exchange rates. The decline in sugar is the result of the reduction in EU sugar prices. Profit growth by grocery, agriculture, ingredients and retail was offset by the expected decline in sugar. On margin, I'd like to highlight that the retail decline was only 20 basis points, so 10.0 to 9.8%. And there, the transaction effects on the of the US dollar on purchases, being an awful lot more of that, were virtually offset by better buying by the Primark team. George will outline our expectation that this half year, I think, really will be seen to be a turning point for Primark's margin, with improvement now in the margin expected in the second half. Return on capital employed, let's spend a moment on that. For the group, that's a strong number, 20.3% for continuing businesses. But I think if you look down the return on capital employed, these are annualised numbers, by the way, you'll see that I think they're strong for each of the businesses. And I think really is a reflection of, over years, the capital discipline that we've acquired, that we've applied to our investment. I'd also say that sugar, even in the face of a decline in EU sugar prices, still give a return on capital employed of 11.9%. So by geography, profit in the UK increased. Profit at British Sugar was broadly in line with last year, and their increased sugar production offset the price decline. Primark's UK profit was ahead. And there, I think it really was the remarkable trading performance of Primark in the UK, and that more than offset a drag from lower margin, which arose from the currency effect. The profit decline in Europe and Africa is driven by the reduced contribution from sugar in Spain on the back of the lower EU prices. Profit in the Americas was ahead at constant currency, so the decline here was the result of, and just as a reminder, the US dollar move on an average basis from 125 to the pound in 2017 to 135 this year. The profit improvement in Asia Pacific was driven by Ovaltine in Thailand and a much improved performance at George Weston Foods in Australia. At that point, I'll hand back to George.
Thank you, John. Starting then with sugar, once again, we've seen very good operational improvement. The performance improvement program has now been running for 5 years, has taken a great deal of money out of the cost base. And looking into the future, we don't see any sign of those cost reductions, that rate of cost reduction, reducing. Illovo profit was in line with last year. Behind that statement, I think there is, we have growing underlying optimism about that business, and I'll spend a little bit of time on Illovo in just a moment. China, where we sold the cane factories last year, we still have two beet factories in the northwest. They had their best ever year, and I'll go into a little bit of detail on that too. And then, of course, the significantly lower EU sugar prices, and I'll spend a little bit of time on that as well. Sugar operations, the cost improvements are still coming out of agricultural development, they're still coming out of supply chain, they're still coming out of process, and we are still finding ways of adding value to co-product revenues. We had a very good period of revenues from co-products coming out of South Africa in the period. British Sugar, as a consequence of Heavy levels of investment over many, many years, and the cost reduction programme is now safely the lowest cost producer in the EU and by some way. In a world where we are connected to world prices now post-regime reform, that's not enough, but it is comforting, therefore, that we believe, and LMC International is a consultant who looks at these things, that we are one of the very most competitive sugar manufacturers in the world. In British Sugar. Illovo production was up to over 1.7 million tonnes of sugar on the back of favourable weather and improved crop management in a number of the Illovo markets. So if I can just take a little bit of your time to have a slightly deeper dive on the Illovo business than I have had before. And it's, I do so because Illovo is now over half of our sugar business, so very important. So sugar in the African diet, it's part of basic nutrition. It's consumed in relatively small quantities, but it is important, and consumption is growing. We have access to not only the markets in which we produce sugar, those are the markets in orange. We also have access to the regional markets and in green. And if you combine the populations of all those markets, it comes to over 400 million people. Illovo used to sell a good quantity of its sugar into the EU. That is now, we're now placing that primarily back into our regional markets. We're growing, we're creating brands in order to do that. New packaging, different sizes of sugar, new routes to market, new distribution capabilities. There are loads of opportunities to build sales from the very low base into that growing market. So population is growing and consumption per head is growing. The pricing environment is also favourable. We are, in many of those markets, well protected by geography. We're also in, protected in some of the markets by importation rules. It's a business, as I say, that we have ever higher levels of optimism about. Moving elsewhere, though, China, the best campaign, the best beet quality, the best processing of the beet that we've seen. It's been a lot of hard work over a number of years. That business produced quite a meaningful profit for us. We've also enjoyed a much more consistent and higher domestic price for sugar in China. In the UK, we were blessed in some ways by record beet yields. The climate was just about perfect. The weather was just about perfect for growing beet last year. And we also grew, we also had a larger area planted for us. We had taken area down in the previous 2 years to get rid of a stock overhang that we'd acquired, I think, in 2013-14. And so production this year went up from 0.9 million tonnes to 1.37 million tonnes. It was a surprisingly high quantity of sugar that came at us. And then in Spain, also good weather produced a big sugar beet crop. Moving to pricing, you will all know by now that the EU sugar regime ended in September 2017. The ending of the sugar regime coincided with a lower point in world sugar prices. At the ending of the regime links European sugar prices to world sugar prices. And of course, we had to have the largest European crop ever in that early period of deregulation too. I guess it's a good thing, but it did put pressure on prices. We've said that we knew that the price reduction was coming at us. We have to be honest and say it came faster and went further than I think we'd been anticipating when we were looking at very low sugar stocks in Europe in July last year. But anyway, we got this enormous crop and it pushed prices down quite a long way. To reassure the gloomy amongst you, we think there always will be a domestic premium in Europe over the globally traded London No. 5 price, which is the white sugar what the globally traded white sugar market. We think that that premium is justified and required for the service levels and the product quality, which are both differentiated within Europe. And as you can see, at the moment, that premium seems to be about 100 euros to 120 euros per tonne. Moving on then to our agricultural businesses, with a big sugar beet crop comes a big quantity of molasses sugar beet feed, which we sold through into the UK animal feed market very successfully. The Chinese business had produced much improved financial returns, well done them. And then the development of the specialty part of this business continues with progress made on specialty proteins in particular. If I move then next to grocery, where we cut and paste the top line, Twinings Ovaltine, strong growth. It was another year of it. Also, we've remarked about improvement at George Weston Foods several times. Their improvement was good in the first half. We've made good progress in reducing Allied Bakeries loss. Quite a lot of work still to be done, but at least we're heading in the right direction. And then we've enjoyed the first contributions from a Chatham in the period. Twinings Ovaltine, Ovaltine brand globally did particularly well. The largest market is Thailand. We saw very good growth in Thailand on the back of some good new product launch and also government subsidies of food consumption amongst the poorer parts of the Thai population. Switzerland produced some, for a market where the population doesn't go up, they had a great 6 months on the back largely of new product innovations. And if I just take you through these pictures from bottom to top, the bottom one I would describe as a very superior pain au chocolat. The middle one is a milk drink with extra protein, and the top one is our version of a Malteser. We had a debate last night about whether I could use the M word with you, but there you are. Twinings also is still innovating, new green tea ranges, new infusions in Australia and France, good progress in the US market, good progress in Italy, and we've launched, and you have in your bribe pack in front of you, new super blends. Super blends are a blend of botanicals and natural flavors, which, here they are, very attractively packaged as you would expect, and just launched in the UK market and will be rolled out in a number of the Twinings markets over the next few months. Allied Bakeries suffers from and benefits from a shift to own label bread sales in the UK. We are very well placed as a scale producer of bread to make high quality own label for our supermarket business partners, and that Tesco's Toasty won the own label bread of the year last year, so it really is high quality bread. We've made significant progress in reducing operating losses, and we'll make more progress in the second half of the year, but as I said before, we're not there yet by a long distance. Kingsmill is back advertising itself on television, and I can't help but show you, because it is so, I suppose, politically incorrect, the world's largest donut line that we've installed in Wakefield. $50,000 an hour, and that's before you add the sugar to them. We're also investing in a new factory to make Ryvita, just to reassure the more health conscious amongst you. That's going up at Bardney and is also commissioning now. So Jordan's Dorset Ryvita, commercially good international growth. We remain a good place to manufacture food for export. And within the Ryvita brand itself, Thins continues to grow well. There's quite a lot of competition in crisp bread, but particularly with the new line going into Bardney, we'll be very well placed to meet that. The integration of Chatham
went well through the period. That's nearly complete. We have run into higher raw material costs. For the those of you who love wine, the harvest was very poor last year, and the must, which is our raw material, was in short supply and prices went up. We think it's, we have no reason to doubt that it's a short-term event. We've launched Patak's paste pots within World Foods. We've supported them, or Jamie Oliver has supported them very successfully. It's been a really good launch. And let me show you what Jamie's been doing for us.
Hi guys, we're gonna make a delicious, so easy fish curry. This is delicious and it's beyond quick and beyond simple. You know, it feels fresh, fragrant, and it's perfect for midweek. Kids, work, and we want kind of nice results really fast. It's something that me and my wife like, even the kids like, because it's still nice and mild. I love a curry, and this is from my book, Quick and Easy Five Ingredient Food. And you know, sometimes, you know, when you want big flavor fast, you need a few little tricks. So these things pretty much always live in my pantry. Patak's korma paste, I'm using the lime pickle as well for that lovely sort of light zinginess that's gonna be amazing. Coconut milk.
Etc. enough, Jamie. But very successful launch, very successful support. He resonates obviously not just in the UK but also in Australia, which is an important market for Patak's. Staying on grocery but moving to Australia, we've had a good go at reducing overheads. The head office has been slimmed down during the period, operating costs then in the individual businesses also coming down. For those of you who don't know, labour costs are very high in Australia, and if you can get labour out, it repays you in spades. Bread volumes in Tip Top were good, and then and one day we will take this line off the slide. The Don KRC factory performance continues to improve. It made great strides, particularly in meat yields in the period. Mazola continues to grow in the States behind the plant sterile campaign, which will run and run and run. Another good period from Mazola. And we are seeing, though, higher freight costs, particularly down the eastern seaboard in the States, as economic activity obviously increases somewhat. Freight costs have gone up significantly. Moving on to ingredients, which we manage in two different units, AB Mauri, which is yeast and bakery ingredients, good operating performance improvement in that business. We've been investing behind bakery ingredients technology and manufacturing for bakery ingredients globally. And then two important markets for us. North America is well ahead of last year. And South America, Brazil and the rest of South America, where there's quite a lot of economic pressure, our businesses there have remained resilient through that period of economic downturn. In ABF ingredients, the specialty ingredients, good growth in specialty lipids, those are fats, and then cereal crisps, which we make in California and also in the Midwest. Increasing amount of food is being sold in bars, and we are an important supplier of the raw materials that go into those bars. Enzymes continues to grow. The new increased capacity in Rajamäki in the enzyme factory is up and running and beginning to give us benefits. Here is a picture of Rajamäki, not in the snow. Usually it is covered in snow. For those of you with a historic interest in things historical, this is the site where the Molotov cocktail was invented in 1939. Right, retail. 7% sales growth, so we're still growing well. We're still expanding stores and building space across almost all our markets, and I'll show you that in a moment. We're seeing increasing benefit from the digital and the social media. This is such an important part of our sales mix now. Margins are in line with last year, as John suggested, because we've offset the consequences of the stronger dollar with better buying. And as John has also said, we expect to see the benefits of sterling and the euro strength against the dollar beginning to come through in the second half and then into next year. In a little bit more detail, UK sales were up 8%, 3% like-for-like growth, and our market share in all clothing well ahead, and it's not just a clothing story, as again I'll illustrate later. Continental European sales are up 6% with share growth in all 10 markets in Europe in which we operate. Like-for-like sales were down, however, for the 24 weeks. If you take out five weeks, which are the four in October and the last week of the period, so the week that followed the 24th of February, we were actually up 1%. So having admitted that the weather was very good last year and it helped us, I think I'm in a position sort of to say that we had five bad weeks of weather and it hurt this year. The operating margin is where it is because of better buying. The stock model is much tighter than it used to be, leads to fewer discounts of stock when sales don't come through. I want to spend some time again just going through the progress we're making in the digital and social media, our engagement with our customers. We do continue to engage very effectively with our customers. Website visits are up on average 8% on the same six-month period last year. We're now safely over 8 million visits per month. We have 11.4 million people following us on the various social media channels, the most important of which is Instagram. It's the place for brands in particular. It's a very good place for Primark to showcase what it sells. And then video remains a key format, and we're using video more and more. So here are some examples of Instagram posts. We've highlighted, or we've increased the size of the likes. It shows that it's not just fashion that sells, where social media engagement is important. Home is the top left, fashion is top right, then beauty on the bottom left, and once more, the thing that works best is Chip and Mrs. Potts on the bottom right, 150,000, 5,000 likes for a range that we introduced last year, not this year. We are using Instagram in particular to drive traffic to the website very deliberately. You can see that link across to Primark.com, in this case, bridal. If you click on that link, and that link changes from day to day, and actually within days takes you to different parts of the Primark website. But if you do click on that one, it takes you to bridal pages of the website. We're also using Instagram stories. It's a good way of getting messaging out to consumers. This is an example of an Instagram story. It's being used to promote retro gaming t-shirts. I apologize for the irritating soundtrack, but here we go. Thank goodness that stopped. We are also using online influencers more. This is Alice Living helping us launch our new workout categories, high performance workout gear, very successfully launched earlier this year. These are Instagram shots actually from Primark's channel, but they also featured on hers as well. And here is another example of a beauty tutorial I showed you last time, how to make yourself up to resemble a mermaid. And here is something else you can do with the Primark ranges of beauty.
I'm going to use an eyeshadow palette by Primark that's completely customizable, so you can choose your own shades to build your own perfect palette. I'm going to start by using this warm nude color, and I'm going to apply this all over my lid. Now for the pop of purple. I'm going to use this shade to stamp over the top of the liner, and then I'm going to smoke this out to create a softer look. Now to finish the look, all we need is a nice coat of mascara.
So it's on the Primark YouTube channel. That is CC Clark. and she's been watched 176,000 times so far. So if that's our communication, this is then what we're selling. To the left is a hooded puffer jacket. We also did one of these for £15, which was equally successful. Mustard has been one of the colours of the season. The mustard puffer jacket at £20 as well. And then we've had a very good period selling fashion denim and also basic denim, of course, but fashion denim in particular was strong through the period. If you go into stores now, you will see slogans across both clothing and accessories for men, women, and kids. You will see license on sliders, those are the shoes. We actually sold 230,000 pairs of feather sliders through winter in the UK alone at £6 a pair. And then the newly launched nudes range of beauty also going very well. For fashion, we're using Glamour magazine and also GQ to announce our fashion ranges for spring-summer. We are very confident in these ranges. With the weather improving, we think that we will see a great reaction to our fashion ranges, and there's a lot of confidence in the communication. You'll all be very relieved to know that inflatables are back in the summer. We introduce some new designs. This toucan for £12 is maybe a must. mermaid tail rings for those of you that don't like the toucan, and hamburgers, both rings and cup holders. So inflatables in large quantities. If that then is product, new stores that we've opened during the period include Charlton on the in London on the left-hand side. It's a lovely store. It illustrates, I think, that there are still locations even in London which we can trade but haven't had sites in until recently. Portugal is a great market for us, so we're delighted to get another store open there. And then Metz in France opened very successfully during the period. We opened 7 stores in the period. There were 3 locations in the UK, all of which were important to us. And we opened, over the last 12 months, we've opened stores in 9 of the 11 markets in which we trade. We expect for the full year to open 1.2 million square feet of selling space. In the second half, there are some really important stores to open their doors. And here's the list. Toulouse will be a great store for us. Antwerp, Valencia, Westfield, White City. When Westfield first opened, they didn't want Primark in there. They have now for several years. And I think June or July, we'll get the Westfield store open. And then Brooklyn, in the USA, which I think, again, will be a great location for us. Moving then just for a moment to an update on the US, we continue to refine the operating model in the existing 8 stores. We continue to refine the ranges to get them more appropriate for each of the 8 different locations in which they're trading. We are, as you know, reducing the size of 3 of the stores down to 35,000 square feet. We think that that is a very interesting size for us to be trading in this less dense environment. And we've announced just today that we will be opening a store. We expect to reach agreement soon to open a store in Sawgrass Mills in Florida, opening late next year. There's a lot of redevelopment of the existing store to occur before we can move in. We can supply it from the existing warehouse. And once again, that 35,000 square feet space, which we think will be great. Sawgrass Mills, then, it's a hybrid mall, so it's a mix of discounter, think Bicester Village, and also full price. We haven't traded in any of any equivalent mall in the States, and we'd like to test it. Sawgrass is the second largest tourist destination in Florida after Disney World, so 45 million people come through it. Very high traffic, very high footfall. Mall, and the shoppers come from all over the place. 110 nationalities last year visited Sawgrass. So it's another test, it's another initiative, and I think that good things and learnings will come out of it. So, outlook then into the second half, finally, acceleration of profit growth in Primark through margin, continued growth in grocery, ingredients and sugar, and the combination of those four are more than offsetting the decline of profitability coming from our sugar businesses. So as a consequence, we expect to see operating profit and adjusted earnings per share going up in the second half. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. So we can open it up to Q&A. Andy Hughes.
It's Andy Hughes from UBS. A couple of questions on Primark, if I may, to kick off with. On the margin at Primark, so hovering around about 10%. Historically, you've been up at the sort of 13% or so. It sounds like markdowns are lower than historically they have been. You'd be reasonably confident of getting back to 13% at some stage, particularly with, what, say, what looks like a lower structural markdown position there. And I'll save the second one.
Yeah, sure.
We expect to see, as I said, margins going up. We don't target the net margin. It's always just the consequence of how well we trade. So we've never set 13% as being good, bad, or indifferent. The net margin is the last thing that happens in the business, but there are tailwinds coming through.
And looking at the like-for-like in the first half, obviously giving us the UK figure and the group figure, I mean, the back out for continental Europe, 6%, maybe even a little bit worse than...
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think if the group's minus 1.5 and we've given the UK as plus 3, so it's probably about minus 4, minus 5 for continental Europe.
Right. Within the various markets that you comment on, I think you said, you know, Spain's still very strong, France is good, Italy good. It feels like, you know, Germany and some of the surrounding markets, you know, was worse than the average. Do you think we're past the worst in terms of that trend, and what are you doing
We're never going to be equally good in all 10 markets. Southern Europe was very robust, but also had this awful October. It was probably worse than the UK. We know that there's work to be done in the German market in particular, but it's been a very difficult market, having said that, and our market share has increased there as well. That's been the most difficult market for us.
When you say work in Germany, is it yeah, more local product coming in to try and differentiate?
Yes, it's a little bit more local product, and I think it is more work to justify cheap clothing. You know, cheap clothing doesn't require people to buy lots of clothing. It just requires them to save money on the clothing that they want to buy. And I think we could do a better job of communicating that reality to German consumers who are, I think at the moment, probably rightly concerned about waste and recycling and sustainability.
Good. Andreas at the back there.
Yeah, Andreas Innes McQuarrie. Just a question on Germany on a follow-up here. your pricing is around 10-15% higher in Germany. Is that an issue? Or is it really what you...
No, Euro pricing is flat across all the markets.
Compared to the UK, it's roughly 10-15% more expensive. So is it...
I think we might quibble with that.
I think we would quibble with that. maybe it depends on where exchange rates are, but that is not. You stated it, Andreas, like it's a policy. It's not the case at all.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. Maybe I'll talk to you afterwards and maybe see where you have your data from. But that isn't our intent at all.
Okay, and maybe a question on the US market as well. So how is underlying trading going on here? Maybe you can elaborate.
Well, it's early days with a number of the stores are still less than a year old. We are still learning lessons. There are reasons for encouragement. Our experience in two of the stores where we reduced space has been very encouraging, but that's all of 5 weeks trading. So I don't think I've got much more to say other than there's reason for encouragement, but we're still in this phase of learning lessons.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so let's get Jeremy in the middle. Thanks, sir.
Jeremy Fialco at Redburn. So a question on the sugar side of things. We're seeing that some of your competitors are making some thumping losses in their European sugar businesses at the moment. So are there any signs of capacity exiting the market, and just what your prognosis for that is from a kind of supply standpoint over the next couple of years?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. The capacity will be determined by farmers' willingness to grow sugar beet at the prices that the producers are willing to pay for it. I think there is no notable reduction in sowing intentions across Europe at the moment. There may be a reduction in actual sowings because of this very late cold weather.
Okay. Yeah, Warren Ackerman.
Good morning, it's Warren Ackerman at SocGen. A couple of questions. First one on Primark. Any chance you could comment on current trading? You obviously told us that the last week was enough to drag down the like-for-like by 50 bips relative to what you said in the pre-close.
Yeah sure.
Is March looking as bad as October was?
No. So that last week, just to remind you, Ireland shut for 3 days. Parts of the UK shut for 2 days, and the consequence was the consequence. We had a better Easter than we'd anticipated, given how poor the weather was for Easter. And trade from Easter has been okay. We've been waiting for this warm weather. I mean, ask the same question in a week and I think we'll have a better answer for you. But I think reasons for optimism that go beyond simply the store's looking great.
And then secondly, just on the margin, obviously you're talking about the currency benefit in the back half and an inflection on that. Maybe if you could quantify that. And secondly, could you maybe talk about in regards to sourcing and Bangladesh in particular, what percentage is now Bangladesh? And is there any concerns around Bangladesh given the FT article this week talking about credit concerns in Bangladesh? Thanks.
Well, let me hit the margin first. So, not surprisingly, I won't give you an exact number, but what I have said is I think we'll see margin expansion for the year as a whole. So if we had a 20 bip decline in the first half, then the second half will be more than a 20 bip improvement. So some tens of basis points. So I think we're reasonably confident. And I think certainly the margin outlook for the second half is looking better. Shall I say Bangladesh percentage? Yeah, Bangladesh percentage is getting on for about 20% of what we buy.
Now, it's an important market. We've published the names and locations of all the suppliers. One of the things I think that makes us slightly different to your point about credit is we pay our suppliers quickly and we pay them regardless of whether we sell their product or not. I sort of wish that if everyone else paid as quickly as we did, some of these credit issues would be reduced.
Okay. Richard, do you want to go? Well, then I'll take you. Okay.
Yeah, thanks very much. Richard Chamberlain, RBC. Just one on Primark, if I can, and then maybe just touch on the dividend. So Primark talked about the digital strategy. Does that vary much in the UK versus internationally? Do you think you're also getting very strong traction on social media, Instagram, etc., outside the UK?
Yeah, the website is published in all the languages in which we trade. Instagram, I think, is a more important channel in some markets than others. and social media engagement is a more important part of the mix in some markets than others, but it's important to all of it, and we do try to tailor as well as we can. We can always do better, but yeah, no, we understand that these are local markets, and what we post in the UK shouldn't necessarily be what we post in the Netherlands.
Yeah, okay, thanks. And just on the dividend, I think it was up 3% for the first half, and I guess in the context of strong balance sheet, you could have paid more. But what was the sort of rationale for that? Was it just broadly in line with kind of earnings?
I think it's broadly in line with earnings. The dividend went up significantly last year.
Right.
We improved the dividend cover through doing that. Last year, so the dividend cover is in a comfortable place for us. We want to maintain a strong balance sheet. It's in the nature of the company to do that. And earnings per share up three, dividends up three. It's reflective
of the adjusted earnings growth of the half year.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Great. Adam at the front.
It's Adam Cochrane at Citi. A couple on Primark, please. In terms of the numbers, can you quantify the cannibalisation impact that's ongoing within the European estate? Is it, if you can't quantify it, can you sort of give us a feeling of how much less bad it's getting within those numbers?
Sure, it's still there. It's the cannibalisation tends to be at its highest in the new markets. So France, we think it's probably over 5-6%. Italy, when we start opening new stores next year, will be heavily cannibalised. Germany, just the maths of now having sort of 25-odd stores, the cannibalisation of a new store is a little bit less, but is still there.
Holland as well.
Sorry, and Holland, of course, has been cannibalised heavily by the new Damrak in the middle of Amsterdam, has cannibalised the stores around it. And that new store in Antwerp will also have a cannibalising effect.
And then in terms of two sort of more theoretical ones, how is the sort of thinking about click and collect coming along? And then when you look at that European like-for-like performance, if you don't see an improvement, would you think about investing some of the FX benefit in pricing, promotion, etc., to start moving it forward? Thanks.
Well, I mean, in terms of how do we think about pricing, we're going to be the most competitive on everything every day, and we'll invest whatever it takes to be there. And I think we've demonstrated over the last couple of years that we will retain that position. I think we need to be just careful to work out what it is that has subdued some of these European markets over the last period of time, and that we're pulling the right lever to get sales growth going in those markets.
So have you done much sort of larger scale advertising? If your price is in the right place, is it about getting the brand awareness, the credentials, etc., to the people?
I think the brand awareness is pretty good. And no, not advertising, but social media engagement, I think, is our model. So yeah, more of that.
And click and collect.
We keep an eye on it.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Any other questions? Yeah, Warwick in the middle now.
Warwick Okines from Deutsche Bank. Two more on Primark, please. Just talking about the tens of basis points improvement in the second half of the year, is that assuming flat prices? And if so, does that mean that the currency benefits from the significant currency move really fall into the next financial year? And then the second question is on availability. George, you talked last time about availability not being quite where you wanted it to be in stores. Any update on that, please?
Yes, okay. So to the margin point,
say the margin point. Yes, I mean, for the second half of this year, I mean, you're pretty well sort of locked and loaded as far as prices are concerned. So there's the assumption of no change in prices there. I mean, I think it's very clear that our price position is actually very good in the market. I think when we come into next year, it's too early to give any sort of feel for that, other than knowing that the tailwind is obviously a very significant one for next year.
And yes, we obsess about availability. It's not just availability in the wider supply chain, so what's in the depot and what's in the store. It's also at times of day, at busy trading periods, where the stock has got to. So can we get stock back out of changing rooms quicker and onto re-merchandise quicker than we've done in the past? So there's a lot of work going on through it, and no, it's good work.
Simon, in the middle.
Judging by our goodie bags, you're still giving bread away. I mean, I note your comments about about lessening losses in bread, but can you see a route to break even in bread?
Yes.
And yes. What would that take?
It will take in the end, higher average pence per loaf. So our cost base is well controlled as a consequence of the investment and all the obsession about cost that's gone on in it. Our volumes are pretty good, so it's mix and price.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Georgina.
Hi, it's Georgina Johan. I'm from JP Morgan. Just a really brief one, please. You've talked about a return to more normalised level of markdown, sort of on a comp of very low levels. Yeah. Just given the weather...
In the second half, yes.
Absolutely. Just given the sort of unfavourable weather that we have had, presumably we are going to see high levels of markdown in the market overall. Have you sort of effectively already accounted for that in your H2 guidance? I.e., has your expectation changed versus several months ago?
Yeah, I mean, we've reforecast internally our markdown percentage for the second half.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, yes, Arthur.
Arthur Eve, Soc Gen. I see that GSK has put Horlicks up for sale.
Yes.
I'm not expecting you to tell me you're going to buy it, but would it fit with the Ovaltine brand?
Look, it's a milk modifier, and we've got a milk modifier brand, so yes, probably. I don't think that's the only thing to consider.
Valuation is maybe the thing to look at. Okay, I think that probably is it. Okay, thank you. Listen, but before everybody goes, you can imagine that investor relations only works smoothly if there's somebody very very good behind it all, and the external face of ABF over the years has been Sue. Come up here, Sue. So very sadly for me and for us, Sue has decided that she's going back to come up here now. Going back to Scotland. So look, certainly on behalf of ABF, and there's going to be lots and lots of thanks on behalf of us internally, but I'm sure on behalf of everybody in this room, we'll miss you very much, Sue. All right. Great, thank you.